freedom and responsibility, a harmonious duo for Zman Cheruseinu. Freedom is grand. Freedom is door opening. Possibilities are accessed. But now the great question becomes, which door do we pursue? What do we do with that freedom? Per se being free, no longer having restraints, but not availing ourselves of the opportunities of that freedom would seem futile. And the truth is, freedom is only a means to an end. To be able to pursue something meaningful, something fulfilling. If life is simply free, but without pursuing anything, it's a banal existence. It's an empty shell. And this is where the issue of Avodas Hashem, service of Hashem, becomes so critical. We each are imbued with a divine soul, as though a piece of Hashem within us, which stirs within us longings and yearnings, which can only be fulfilled when we pursue Him, Hashem, and the relationship to Him. And therefore, it is only through Avodas Hashem, it is only through service to the divine, that all the blessings, all the opportunities, all the promises and possibilities of freedom can be achieved, and that is the great question of meaning itself. Let's develop this a bit tonight, and develop within the Yetzias Mitzrayim story where divine service and responsibility, the responsibility of Torah to Hashem, fits into the picture. The truth is, the assertion that service to the divine, is part and parcel of freedom, can seem troubling. How can service, subordination, submission, be synthesized with freedom, with liberation, with a casting off of subordination to a master? And yet, at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the time of Cheirus itself, the Jewish people assume responsibilities to serve Hashem. Mitzvos, the process of Matan Torah begins to unfold. And actually, it is at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim that we know a new master, you might say. Listen to the way Rashi renders the pasuk, Anochi Hashem Elokecha asher tzisicha mi'aretz Mitzrayim. I am Hashem, your Lord, who took you out of Mitzrayim. He became a Lord to us when we left Mitzrayim, says Rashi indeed. The Exodus is an appropriate basis that you be subjected to me as your Lord. Because I took you out of Mitzrayim, says Hashem, I am your Lord. So here we have submission to the Lord, Hashem himself, as part and parcel of the story of freedom, believe it or not. In fact, the actual behaviors of the Jewish people at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim reflect this new avoda, this service to a new master, i.e. Hashem. The Korban Pesach, which the Jewish people offer, is the very first mitzvah which is called an avoda. Ushmartem es ha'avoda hazos, ma ha'avoda hazos. It is significant that Korban Pesach is the first so-called avoda in Chumash. The Torah is cluing us that Korban Pesach was the initiation, was the assumption of a relationship to Hashem, of Avodah. And as if that were not enough, beyond Korban Pesach, as the Jewish people on the way out from Egypt project ahead to towards Matan Torah. The Torah repeatedly points to Avodah. It is as though the word Avodah is the fluorescent neon color phrase throughout the Yetzias Mitzrayim story and moving ahead. Because you will notice, Hashem tells Moshe at the burning bush, you will leave Mitzrayim, and what will happen here at Har Sinai? You will do avoda here. And likewise, Moshe tells Paro again and again, let my people go, God says, so they may serve me. Shalachas ami v'yavduni, so they can worship me. So all of the provocation, all of the tension, of avoda, subordination to a master at the time of freedom itself, is not ignored by the text. The Torah does not hide, obscure this problem. The Torah leads us to stare it right in the face. Avoda to Hashem is in fact the path in front of us at Yetzias Mitzrayim. And this might make a certain degree of sense. A Jewish people who have been subordinate to Egyptians till now, they know Avodah, they know subordination. So how are they supposed to perceive God? How are they supposed to perceive Torah? They perceive it through the lens of Avodah. Now Avodah to a new master. And we can therefore explain why the Matan Torah projected ahead to the Jewish people is not one actually with a promise of even receiving a Torah. Neither does Hashem tell them at the time before they leave Egypt, you will strike a bris, you will strike a covenant with me at Har Sinai. All he says is that you will worship me, Tavdin Asalukim al Arazah, because the Jewish people relate to authority figures through slaves' lenses. And therefore they think of Hashem in these terms. And from this perspective, Yetzias Mitzrayim is in a sense a transition of Avodah, from Avodah to Paro to Avodah to Hashem. But while there might be a certain resonance in this perspective, it is deeply, deeply troubling. Has all the glory of Zman Cheruseinu, a time of freedom, not been sullied by this perspective? When you leave Egypt, you will remain subjected to a master, albeit now a nice, benevolent one, unlike the tyrant of before. But avoda to a master nonetheless. The tension is palpable. There seems to be a fundamental problem here. Zman Cheruseinu, when we are assuming responsibilities of Avodah to Hashem. The truth is, Chazal, the sages, don't seem to feel there is any contradiction between freedom and Avodah to Hashem. In several citations, we can trace a pattern that the Chazal place back to back, spliced together as one, the Jewish people's freedom on the way out of Mitzrayim, along with the Jewish people's newfound Avodah, they don't see any problem. For example, listen to the Medrash's portrayal of Paro's Emancipation Proclamation. Have you ever wondered what it sounded like when he said, go? What were all the attitudes, what were all the sentiments inherent and implicit in Paro's Emancipation Proclamation? Medrash portrays as follows. Paro began to scream, until now you were my slaves, but now you are free. Praise Hashem, for you are now his servants. Notice, in one breath, in the same breath, now you are free, But now you are Hashem's servants. Both coexist. Both harmonize, apparently. Praise Hashem, for you are now his servants, can be part of an emancipation proclamation, believe it or not. And likewise, when we look at the next quotation in the Gemara, when the Gemara midrashically envisions, attempts to give form to the intimate scene on the night of Pesach, when Hashem encountered us, passing over our homes, says as follows: when Hashem passed over the lintel and the doorposts, Hashem says, I declared, B'nai Yisrael, as my servants now, you are no longer servants to fellow man, only servants to me. Thus I took them out from slavery to freedom. Once again, he says, you become my servants, and thus I have taken you out from slavery to freedom. So it is so clear in these citations, freedom and Avodas Hashem were in fact uttered in the same breath. There is no contradiction here. There is total harmony. We can embrace Avodas Hashem and our commitments to Hashem in total harmony with all the promise, all the glory, all the hopes we have pinned on freedom. How so? How so? This question is too consequential. As an observant Jew with commitments to Torah, and yet the ability to believe I am free, these responsibilities to Torah, to Judaism, liberate me. The issue at hand is too compelling, too consequential to shake it off with a little vertela, with a little sentence. Something big, there is some deep secret below the surface here, which we ought to bring to light. So let's begin with a well-known statement of Chazal the Sages, quoted among other places in the sixth parak of Avos, Ein lecha ben chorin ela misha osek betorah. No one can be truly called free unless he is immersed in Torah. Now this aphorism of the sages is so well known. Ein lecha ben chorin ela misha osek betorah. Only one immersed in Torah can be called free. That it almost has become cliche. Rolls right off the tongue. That we don't feel the power of the statement and the provocation of the statement. That yes, indeed, Torah, with its system of rules, sets us free. How so? The sheer provocation of that statement indicates there's something big, there's something grandiose. Again, a little vertela, a little homily is not going to do it for me. I would like to believe that the secret lays in the text itself. In this very passage where the sages say only he who is immersed in Torah can be free, in this very passage lays the key to the harmonious duet, to understanding the harmonious duet between freedom and responsibility to Hashem. So let's dig deeper. In that very passage in Avos, Chazal the sages quote the source for this teaching, Torah makes us free. They cite a verse regarding the Luchos, the tablets. V'hamichtav, michtav elukim charas al haluchos, divine script of the Ten Commandments of the Saras Hadibras was engraved on the tablets. And the sages take the word charas, engraved, and they repunctuate it as cheras, freedom. That the expression engraved upon the tablets can be reread. The words of Torah on the tablets free us. Now this sounds like a cute, almost trite play on words. One might be tempted to believe that the sages are simply supporting a sentiment which they knew anyway. Responsibility is consistent with freedom, frees a person. They're supporting this by engaging in a homily of sorts. But on a deeper level, we know we're dealing with the sages here. We're dealing with the Chazal here. Their drash reading of verses is meaningful, is significant, is inherently meaningful and significant. If they are seeing the symbolism of freedom, cheras, in the engravery of the Luchos, charas, there must be a deeper connection at work here, an innate connection at work here. Somehow, the concept of engravery on the tablets symbolizes what freedom is all about, and therein lays the secret, the solution to our quest. It all lies in the symbolism of engravery. How so? Engravery is a unique manner in which to form letters. There is an intimate connection between the letters and the stone in which the letters are carved. Because the engraved letters emerge from within the stone itself. They are chiseled from within the rock. Unlike the standard mode of writing with ink upon paper, where the ink is a foreign substance imposed upon the paper, when the sculptor engraves, he is forming the letters from within the tablet itself. What this symbolizes regarding the Luchos, the Torah is not a foreign entity imposed upon us. Torah is not something from without, imposed upon us, pushed upon us, constraining us, remaking us, not at all. Sculpted and engraved within the tablet, Torah is bringing out our deepest dreams, our deepest yearnings, our deepest longings. Just as the sculptor, when he looks at the stone, is able to envision the beautiful sculpture within the rock. He just has to carve it out. It's there. Hashem, the great artist, looks at us when he gives us the Torah. And he says, perfect. The beauty lays within the Jew. I don't need to remake the Jew by imposing on them. I simply need to bring out, to facilitate the expression of that which lays within them. Torah sculpts from the surface, from within, below the surface. Torah brings out what lays within us. When Torah is observed authentically and with health, emotional health, balance, the individual finds self-expression, their individual voice, fulfillment through the Torah. That deepest part of us, which is yearning for meaning. And in each of our individual cases, the meaning which our individual neshama is pursuing. It is through Torah learning and observance that we find ourselves. That yes, that deeper me might be buried below some layers. We all have some exterior layers. We have a Yetzer Hara which confuses us. We have baggage, emotional baggage. There are indeed exterior layers to the stone which need to be carved away. the Torah system of rules is bringing out what lies below the surface. The self-expression which each of us are seeking. And from this perspective, charis and cheiros, freedom, is reflected by engravery. And if the Torah seems to constrain us, not constrain us in the short term, which of course a system of discipline does, but constrain us in the big picture, on the level of personal expression, then we must not be observing it correctly. If Torah is imposing us, if it's ink upon the paper, rather than engravery, bringing out what lies within, that is not Torah. It is a Torah which frees, as symbolized magnificently by engravery. Not only is this explanation inspiring in terms of its notion of a Torah of personal expression, a Torah which is facilitating personal expression. It is a beautiful understanding of a midrashic teaching, how seemingly so randomly engravery is linked to freedom. Well, not random at all. But there's more to come. I suggest that as we dig even deeper into this teaching in Avos and study its context, we will see even greater indication of this concept, that the freedom of Torah is all about recognizing that the key to freedom lays within. Finding oneself, capturing that neshama within us, and giving it appropriate facilitation, appropriate manifestation, as Torah does. Because let's study the sentence immediately before the above studied one, Ein Lecha Ben Chorin Al Misha Osik B'Torah. Only he who was immersed in Torah can be free. What does it say immediately before? So in a rather visceral, raw passage, the sage's teaching begins as follows. Shakol Misha Eina Osik B'Torah Nikra Nazaf. He who rejects Torah is called rebuked. Shanemar, as the verse says, Nezem Zav Ba'af Chazir, like a nose ring in the snout of a swine, Isha Yafa Basaras Tam, and a beautiful woman who acts without grace. An individual who rejects Torah is compared to a golden nose ring on the snout of a swine, or a beautiful woman who acts without grace. What does this raw metaphor, these raw metaphors, mean? A nose ring on the nose of a pig, a beautiful woman without grace. Well, a golden ring is inherently beautiful, but somehow it loses its glimmer when it is on the snout of a swine. And likewise, a beautiful woman is inherently attractive. But if she doesn't have grace, somehow that beauty does not shine forth. A Jew without Torah remains a Jew who is inherently beautiful. However, their beauty is not exuded. They lose that glimmer. What the Torah is doing is not remaking the Jew, says the Mishnah. Rather, what the Torah is doing is, it is giving expression to that innate beauty, to the glimmer of the gold, to the attractiveness of the beautiful person. That is what Torah is doing. Because the beauty of a Jew lies within, our holy neshama has it. We have it. We don't need help in terms of the raw material. We each have it. That is our birthright. We just need help with the expression. And that is where Torah comes into the picture. Well, seen this way, when that very same passage in Avos continues with the engravery and the freedom, we see splendidly the consistency, the harmony of these teachings as they are woven together, juxtaposed. That it is the very same idea first conveyed by the golden nose from the beautiful woman that just need to be showcased properly, given appropriate expression. Yeah, well, that is the very same idea in the passage which follows. The freedom of Torah is reflected by the engravery upon the Luchos, bringing out the innate promise of the stone. What a discovery. How two sentences, which appear side by side in Avos, or one after the other, one regarding the golden nose ring and the beautiful woman, and then followed by the engravery and the freedom. Two passages which to a casual reader might seem randomly cobbled together. Not random at all. Perfectly threaded as a cohesive tapestry. Revealing to us one overall inspiring notion about who we are and the role Torah serves as a cultivating Torah. A Torah which brings out who we are rather than a Torah that stuns us. And seen this way, the system of rules in Torah are really no different than the type of discipline any successful person adopts. No one achieves success without some protocol, schedule, approach of discipline, how they are going to lead their lives, manage their time, manage their behaviors. The successful person does not feel stunted by their system of discipline. They appreciate that the system of discipline is the means and not the end. It is what is enabling them to pursue the potential and possibility which they have. Well, the same is true about Torah. Torah liberates. Torah gives voice to those deepest longings and yearnings, and not only gives them voice, gives them fulfillment, provides expression. As with every Torah true discovery, when the beauty surfaces, the beauty of a new revelation, a new resonant insight, you know you have found gold, so keep digging. There are more deposits to be found. Because the more we think of the Luchos engravery, the more we see how so many statements in Torah coalesce and come together around this theme. For example, the Pasuk says in Mishle regarding Torah, Kisvei maluach libecha, inscribe the words of Torah upon the luach, upon the tablet of your heart. Now that expression, inscribe the Torah upon the luach, the tablet of your heart, cannot but evoke the luach, the luchos, the two tablets, and some sort of analogy between the way the Jew personalizes Torah, internalizes Torah, and the way the letters of the luchos were written. Well, yes, now it is so clear the power of that analogy. The words of the luchos, which were not imposed like ink upon paper, but rather were found within the tablet. That is the heart of a Jew. The words of the Torah bring out our heart of hearts, our innermost hearts, those deepest longings, those deepest passions. So yes, indeed, our heart is like the Luchos. Now, these revelations tonight might sound highly creative, highly revolutionary. But actually, I came to realize that they are very much in sync with classical teachings. The celebrated thinker of the last generation, Rav Moshe Shapiro, once presented a fascinating shiur in which he mentioned that we know luchos have always been written, painted in Jewish art upon shuls and buildings in a rather peculiar way. Typically, luchos have been painted upon shuls and the like as semicircles, as round-top luchos, two round-top luchos. As much as we know, in fact, that the luchos were rectangular, not round-topped. And Rav Moshe Shapiro disavowed the possibility that there is some mistake at work here. The possibility that Jewish artists and Jewish tradition is fundamentally adulterating the luchos. He said, not at all. You see the Jewish people envision the luchos as their lathe, as their heart. And just as in human art, the heart is painted with two round top lobes. Well, the luchos, in the Jewish creative mind, are envisioned and pictured this way. Well, this is exactly the teaching which we have been developing tonight, the revelation which we have laid out tonight, that apparently Jewish people, including our artists and our show architects and the way they painted luchos, just got it. That's our heart, you see. The way the letters are written on the luchos, that's what Torah is. Torah is bringing out what's within our heart. It's not imposing upon our heart. And again, I must repeat, if ever you find in life that your Torah lifestyle is not coming together, not resonating, something is out of balance, your life is hobbled, not thriving, then something is inauthentic about that Torah. Torah, in its very nature, resonates with the individual, frees the individual, gives expression to the individual, certainly does not stunt the individual. And this fundamental understanding that Torah is in line with our lathe, with our heart of hearts, is articulated quite directly in a well-known statement of Chazal the Sages, in a Gemara which tells us Ribon Ha'olamim, Master of the World, Hashem, Gali V'yadua Lefanecha, it is well known before you, Sheritzoneinu lasos ritzoncha, we really want to do your will. Your Torah will is actually what we want. We struggle sometimes, not for lack of want. Umima akev, who holds us back from doing the right thing? Sa'ar shebe'isa, the leavening in the dough, i.e. the Yetzahara. Doing the right thing, Jewish virtue, is never antithetical to us, not in line with what we want. It is always giving fulfillment to what we really want, Hashem. You know, Torah, your will, is who we really are. Doesn't always work out that way because sometimes we err. There is a Yetzirah which leads us astray. Now, this teaching is well known, but perhaps it is not generally noted a magnificent nuance in this teaching. Notice how unlike most of our liturgy and most teaching of the sages, which refer to the Yetzirah directly as Yetzirah, the evil inclination, this teaching about the innermost heart of a Jew that wants to do the right thing refers to the Yetzirah by analogy, as Sa'arsha be'isa, leavening in the dough. Why is the metaphor of the Yetzirah as leavening in the dough apropos to this particular perspective? Hashem, we really want to do the right thing. Because leavening distorts dough. The chemical process of leavening changes, corrupts the natural makeup of the dough. And this is what the Yetzirah does. From the perspective of this teaching, Hashem, we want to do the right thing. The Yetzirah is distorting us, that we pursue short-term perceived benefits and lures, which are not in line with our vision in life, not in line with what we really want. We have a distorted impression of who we are and what we are seeking. That is the way the Yetzirah operates. And moreover, just as leavening is added to dough in the interest of increasing taste, we pursue these distractions for perceived taste benefits, tickling our taste buds, short-term benefits, which are not our long-term pleasure, our long-term yearnings, longings, and drives. How magnificent that, yes, indeed, it is this teaching, the teaching all about the innate desires, yearning, longings of a Jew for virtue. It is in this context that the Yetzirah is depicted as leavening in dough. A Yetzirah which distorts us, which confuses us. That is what this teaching is all about, as we've been developing throughout the evening, revealing the sages' perspective below so many of their teachings. The Jew is inherently beautiful. If a Jew ever seems spiritually ugly, if we perceive ourselves as spiritually ugly, well, we are confused. That is not the true us. Torah's never remaking us, remaking the ugly one into the beauty. We are the beauty. Torah is simply bringing the beauty of the neshama, expressing the beauty of the neshama. And therefore it is axiomatic to Torah. Torah, when observed properly, always comes with a self-fulfillment, a self-expression, a liberation. Torah frees. Torah liberates. The harmonious duo of freedom and responsibility. Because when one commits to responsibilities that are in line with their deepest yearnings and longings, the responsibilities liberate. The responsibilities are leading them to where they actually want to be and ensuring that they are not led astray. As opposed to when one commits to responsibilities or commitments which are not in sync with who they really are and each of us in our own individual lives, what each of us are seeking. So returning to Yetzias Mitzrayim, we can now begin to own the duo, the harmonious duo of Cheiros and Avodas Hashem. We assume responsibilities to Hashem at the time of freedom. We are not simply leaving the subordination to Paro and finding a new master who is but more benevolent. Not at all. We are leaving tyranny and the notion of self-restriction, and we are assuming the existence and the orientation of self-fulfillment. But not the childish self-fulfillment who believes, the child, I will find fulfillment if I just do whatever. And think about the child who does whatever, the child who believes, if only I can play hooky from school and not have a program and just lie on the couch like a couch potato or doing whatever, we know how long that ecstasy lasts. We know that freedom simply in terms of cessation of restrictions without a clear approach, pursuing something meaningful with a system of commitment, we can all identify with this truth, and for a Jew, an innately holy being with divine longings, it is only through commitment to Torah, through Avodas Hashem, that we find that greater meaning that we are so ardently seeking. Now, this all inspires but we naturally have a certain skepticism. The learning process is fundamentally based on a healthy dose of skepticism. That is how we learn. Have we stretched a bit here? Connecting the dots here back to Yetzias Mitzrayim. That the notion of the innermost heart of the Jew, that heart which is like the Luchos, which just has to be sculpted, bring out the beauty that lays within that hunk of stone. Do we have clear indication of that linkage back to Yetzias Mitzrayim to connect the dots and to bring our circle truly full circle? Well, when we study that final and last teaching, which describes the Eitz Hara as leavening in the dough, adulterating who we are, confusing us regarding what we really want in life and the heart of a Jew, which in the heart of hearts wants meaning and purpose, we can't help but notice the overtones to Pesach, describing the Yetz Hara as Sa'ar Shabbaisa, leavening in the dough. I would argue it is almost Torah malpractice if we would not note how something about Pesach lays in this teaching. That on Pesach, when we remove the leavening in the dough, and when we appreciate that a mitzvah on Pesach is not unidimensional, the matzah versus the chametz is not simply commemorating the aspect of redemption that they ran out before there was time for their dough to rise. But actually, the matzah, in contrast to the chametz, is capturing the entire theme of the holiday of Pesach, as Manche was saying. Well, the notion of cheiros, that true freedom, is when we have clarity of self, clarity of purpose, unadulterated by leavening in the dough. Here we have right in front of us, staring us in the face. Tonight's entire shir is staring us in the face on Pesach, in the matzah which we eat on Pesach. The matzah which is unadulterated by chametz. That's us. That is the notion of cheiros, the concept of cheiros which we are seeking. Clarity of self, unadulterated by leavening in the dough. It is so clear here. The sages must have had Pesach in mind when they spoke about leavening in the dough as distorting self. So why just sit back and marvel when we approach Torah from a panoramic meta perspective? Tracing the patterns, connecting the dots. The overall tapestry always weaves together consistently. And here we have a fundamental approach towards Torah, towards Judaism, which is really a game changer in terms of how we approach Judaism, how we approach life itself. Do I feel impeded and stunted by the rules and regulations? Do I feel liberated? Because in the end, when all is said and done, there is really one question which I want to be able to answer at the end of my life. Not, did everything go my way? But we want to feel that we've left our mark, that we've accomplished that which is so innate to our being, that which we are really, really seeking on a neshama level. When we feel that fulfillment, that is a life well spent. That is a life worth living. That is a life of freedom. That is a life of Torah freedom. That is a life of the harmonious duo, the harmonious duet of freedom and responsibility. Wishing everyone a good Yontif. Thank you very much.